SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Was that my? That was me. Hold on. Yeah, you don't know until you open your mouth that there's something gurgling in your throat. Very good Thursday, everybody. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. It is Thursday, and at least up here. Kind of a hazy and, cold, you know, that weird sort of fogginess that you get. In fact, I should have actually texted Tina because not a great morning for those of you that live in areas where pretty much the deer have, right? They've taken over everywhere. They're such a nuisance, but... In fact, Tina pointed out to me yesterday, speaking of which, they're coming into, you know, they're not coming into the house, although you see plenty of video of deer coming into houses. And there's that great video of the bear smashing somebody's front door. Wouldn't be too happy about that. We just put a new front door on. But deer, the thing is like deer droppings. And so they're coming in here at night. They haven't come up on the porch to eat the cat food, but anyway, I don't know how I got in this, but it just occurs to me because of the fog. It's a little dangerous drive for Tina from here to Salem, you know, which is on the Vermont border, and pretty woodsy, pretty treacherous, and there's always they are, I tell you. They are the dumbest. they got size. They got a brain the size of a ping pong ball. It's just they do stupid things. They see a car and they specifically dart out. I've only ever hit one. I knock on wood. I've only ever hit one deer. The best story. They're making me think of Andy now. You know, we were cheated this Christmas, by the way, out of the Sean Clancy Christmas tree story. So the first chance we get to talk to Sean, we have to catch up on the Christmas tree and see where things stand. But do you remember, if you have to have been listening a long time if you remember the adventure of Andy renting a car and... when he used to rent a car in Manhattan, drive up to New York and drive back. And he stopped doing that after he hit a deer. And that's the Woody Allen, right? Isn't that the Woody Allen gag about the deer? The deer wakes up on the hood of the car. There's been a lot of treatments of that, actually. But Andy telling that story is a classic. Speaking of which, I never called Jay Hovde back. Jay, if you're listening, good morning. And I forgot to get back to you last night. Jay called me. We were having dinner, and I didn't get. I listen. this is like we're married. I'm telling you all these stupid stories. There's actually something Andy said. Yeah, I don't know if I want to get into that. I'm all over the place here getting started. Tom, speaking of Sean Clancy, Tom Law is going to join us early here, and I know we're going to talk to Tony, and I may even reach for Tony a little early. I reached out for Terry Meeks, and a couple of things happened yesterday after we got off the air, and one was that we caught up. I saw the opportunity. To offer everybody Jory Scriver's mailing address at the Las Palmas Medical Center in El Paso. Yeah, and I know a lot of people saw it. So I put it yesterday. I put the address on a terrific picture of her from, actually, I think the picture is, I think it might be, I don't know if that's Turf Paradise, or I can't really tell from that picture if it's New Mexico or Turf Paradise. But anyway, Jory Scriver, Las Palmas Medical Center, 1801 North Oregon Street, El Paso, Texas, 79901, and she's in the ICU room 226. And we'll keep, you know, getting updates, and thanks again to Julie Farr for the visit yesterday. If you were just listening to the replay, you heard Andy, which, of course, was predictably, you know, I don't want to say frivolous, but it was, you know, it was kind of fun and rollicking. And then the very serious topic, Julie's own son, Bryce, lost a leg in the gate incident. And right now, the situation with Jory Scriber trying to regain feeling in her lower body from the waist down, essentially. So you can write her, send her cards. I said, I sent out a note later in the evening that if you hadn't noticed the address on the picture in yesterday's show listing, that I wanted to do it again. And in addition, a GoFundMe had been established, and it was first and foremost, it was to get her family, to help her family travel to El Paso and be there. And so that got established on Sunday or Monday, and it's already raised $20,000, and obviously going to be, need more, during her recovery. So I wanted to get a conversation. And Tony, if Terry Meeks can't join us today, then Tony can certainly address part of it, which is, in light of what is now not just the, not just the monitoring for Damar Hamlin, and this condition very slowly seems to be improving. There is now, the NFL is now facing serious backlash, as they should. Because, don't forget it, but over and above the CTE issue, they are being exposed for the usury policy, the disposability of, their players, and are being absolutely now, people that have held back are not holding back. If you didn't see that six-minute video from a sports talk show in Cleveland, I should go back, and I should have retweeted. I think I just liked it. I should have retweeted it. A guy that understands disability insurance, he exposes the NFL's shameful approach and disregard. And Dave Hill, I know that when Dave joins us today, that Dave's column is not going to appear in the New York Times this week. So I don't know if he'll maybe he'll put it on a Substack, or maybe I'll put it on the website, because he's already done the work and had written the column. But he let me know last night that they were not going to run the betting column this week. And I mean, there's calls for, for all the games to be postponed this weekend. It doesn't appear that I haven't looked for an update this morning. But anyway, for our purposes, for our game, and there's been fights, obviously, and there's been grappling over the years between the guild and independent, contracting riders. The fight that they've had to put forth to be adequately covered by insurance, and the risk factor, obviously, as we have talked all week, since Tuesday, the risk factor involving jocks, and not just jocks, exercise riders, the horsemen, grooms, everybody around the shed row. I mean, you know, we think of the danger factor being strictly in the afternoons, but that's not true at all. You know, you can get trampled, you can get kicked in the stall, you can get, you know, a mean horse, or a horse that is a bully horse. I mean, to be honest, we had one. I mean, it was a toy cannon. Was a big, kind of surly. He wasn't nasty. He wasn't a rogue, but he just was irritable. And you know, horses. This is a good topic for any horseman can address this. You know, dealing with, you know, horses that like to throw their weight around, essentially, and you know, or rather than working with their handlers, they prefer to let the handler know that I'll do it if I want to, not because you're telling me. And then, you know, in a stall, you know, a horse will pin a groom or a farrier or a vet, you know, against the stall wall. They know the circumference, the square footage. You know, they'll let it be known. So the danger factor and the liability issues that racing faces day to day for at every single, you know, all 24 hours is, to me, I would think, I mean, far more hazardous and a higher degree. So I think it's worthwhile if and Tony, because Tony's been on, you know, on boards and you know, during his time with the guild, and then, you know, then he stepped away from the guild. He might even want to talk about that. And of course, you know, with the passing of JJ last month, you know, one of the things that JJ and Sam were heavily involved in were, you know, were the exposure of Gert Manian, you know, during his grifting of the guild and his almost, you know, almost fatal, what do you call it, marauding of the guild coffers. And Tony broke. Tony and there were, I think, three other. There were Tony, maybe Jerry Bailey, I think Larry Melanson. Tony will tell you this. There were three or four jocks that were warning, that tried to warn everybody in the guild that they were being swindled and being hustled. And JJ fought, he pitched in to fight Gert Manian as well, loudly, to his everlasting credit. But, you know, the expense that's involved in covering jocks, and even what insurance can be, you know, coverage that can be set in policies, it is not, you know, totally adequate. I mean, there's $1 million. I think there's $1 million. I think everybody, I think all the tracks hold $1 million umbrella liability or disability coverage for jocks being injured. But we'll get Terry and actually, you know who else? It just occurred to me that I could have I could as an alternate. Okay, Terry's a yes, so he is going to join us. But there's also Nancy LaSala at PDJF. You know that this is her sort of day to day existence is looking after the 60 plus permanently disabled jocks. So we're going to do this today, and Tony will touch on it, and so will Terry. All right? Tom Law is going to join us, and we'll do some Eclipse conversation. Tom, I think last year we did that. Last 22 early, but we sort of were hinting, I think, at some of the our decisions, right? Last month, we talked maybe, I don't know, 5 weeks ago? beginning of December. So anyway, Dave Hill, early today, he's got something he's got to be at 11:30. And so I think we're going to talk to Dave at 10:30. Seth Merrow held over from yesterday, and I'm sure we'll do another look. And by the time Seth rolls in here, we will have, I think, we should have the pick six. I'll be watching Andy's feed, and hopefully we'll have the scratches so we can make some final decisions. I put together the play. It's a $96 base play, and I'm not entirely thrilled approaching this. So far, I wish there were, it wouldn't hurt if there's a scratch or two, honestly, that might make it slightly, I don't know, I maybe I would be more confident. And I'm not even sure, the first leg, that maiden 20, going the mile, and I ultimately went three deep as A's, and then I took three C's. And even then, six out of the 10 horses, it's such a murky bunch. I mean, there's not a horse of the ones that have run. The highest buyer that's been posted is a 41. And I think the highest, Thoroughgraph figure is, you know, in like 20, and there was a 20, and I think the horse on the outside that's going to be favored, second in Reed, has got a pair of 18s, and that actually is not an embarrassing number. But what I didn't like about second in Reed, who does get first Lasix for Jimmy Ryerson, the stretching back out, and Jimmy stretched second and Reed in the second start, and then actually he paired up the 18s. Now he drops to a low level. I mean, he's supposed to win this. I don't know. It's a messy, messy bunch. I mean, I didn't even use the other Bruce Levine. I grudgingly used Drumoland, who I wasn't crazy about, as a C. Second time starter, the big drop, gelded Lasix, the million different things going on. This is such a goofy sequence because of the two maiden races where you'll be amazed that anybody's going to win, but there's going to be. There's going to be at least one winner in each of those races. So anyway, we'll do some more looks. Rich Ang later. We'll check in on Rich, and I want to find out. I have not heard from him over Christmas, but I'm going to guess that the betting on horse racing 2.0, the revised edition, has shipped. I want to hear from Rich, and we want to get some early impressions from Rich, who, of course, provides daily coverage and analysis of the Santa Anita meet. That's his. That is his wheelhouse. In addition to the pick five today, the carryover, there was also yesterday, and I didn't look at it because I just have not been paying attention to Parks, to be honest, and it seems a little foolhardy to go investing in a sequence that it's a force out. In fact, it's funny because Andy did excoriate. Boy, I think that's two uses of excoriate this morning. That's the over under of excoriate, I think, was a half. So I blew that number right out of the water. two uses of excoriate. I didn't go chasing that Parks force out yesterday. And boy, it actually paid very well, considering there was only one difficult horse Empire House, and there's a story even in that horse, because here's Jonathan Wong coming east with the Tommytown horses, and they win the 10th. That's right. This was a weird, there's a big card because they had the stakes. They had those makeup stakes. Got to talk about those results too. But there was only one horse, and this was the horse. Empire House at 11-1 paid $24.60. The other four races were very straightforward and mundane. You had the 3-2 favorite for John Service and Mrs. Chapman. Congratulations to Pat Chapman, Someday Farmer course, and Equistar breaks the maiden, 3-year-old. Wire to wire under Frankie, and pays $4.60. So I mean, everybody, I assume, had that. Then you had the first stake, which was that Blitzen and Repo Rocks, Jamie Ness, and Double B Racing. And Repo Rocks, you know, they're that really 5-year-old now, and has had, you know, has really had a nice enough career. Went off as the co-second choice, paid $7.20, and had to be on everybody's ticket. The Kris Kringle, riding with Biden, speaking of a nice career, the 5-year-old with Paco, wins by a nose. And this probably saved a lot of people who wouldn't have had a matter of time on the ticket. I'm sure some people did and would have liked to have won the photo. But riding with Biden pays $5.60. And that, of course, cashes King, who ran second, actually, in the other stake, I think, or ran second in the maiden race. But, you know, this was all very straightforward. Paid $5.60 as the second choice. So everybody probably is alive going into that 10th race, and the only tough horse you had to have was Empire House. And, you know, frankly, if you knew anything about Jonathan Wong and you know, his time at Golden Gate, you probably, you know, looked at this horse. Now, the interesting thing is My Kentucky Girl was in there, too. This was the Mrs. Claus, and not the sanity clause. Everybody knows there's no such thing as sanity clause. One of the great, if you right, Groucho, Groucho, Oh, my God. I got to find that. You've never heard. There's a lot of you that are like, what's he talking about? I got to find that. What is that from? What is it? Which one? Is that from Night at the Opera? It's your standard sanity clause. Oh, come on. There's no such a thing as a sanity clause. Oh my God! Then you had the 5-2 second choice win the nightcap, a starter allowance. Ron Abrams. Oh my God! So anyway, the pick five paid $2,300 for 50 cents, which was a hell of a payout. Hell of a payout, and I think they took in $700,000. On the right, because the pool was three and change, so. I mean, I was hands off yesterday about it. Today, though, well, New York, a different story. All right, I got to move on because this is a problem. What I just did to myself. A couple of things too, as we reach for Tom. The weekend action. Highlighted the Cal Cup, but also the Jerome in New York, 150,000, not graded, but it does come with Derby points. And Field of Eight, led by Arctic Arrogance, the Linda Rice Broman product, the gray, and the 3-year-old debut of Andiamo a Firenze, the Firenze Fire sibling. It's a nice enough field. Linda's also got a horse that she owns, that Valenzen Day. general banker for Jimmy Ferraro. There's a nice, and then they brought back the Queens County, and we didn't, you know, we touched on the horse, but we didn't talk about the reboot with Norm Cash, Lynn Cash. He's entering both Double Crown, I guess he referred to it, Double Crown and Plot the Dots. You know, one thing that's notable is as he keeps running, he keeps bringing in New York, he keeps bringing, you know, the Mid-Atlantic riders with him. Juan Acosta is coming up, and the Wolf Scent, the Wolf Scent kid. Tyler Service has got his big horse, Sugar Ray 2, Seafoam in here for Michelle Giangiulio, and 10 Strike. And of course, you can't run a race like this without Uriah St. Louis. Forewarned shows up. Davey Jacobson with Thomas Shelby. Todd's got Bourbonic, who scratched the other day for this spot. You got that nice law professor for Rob Atrus. This is it was a good looking race the other day, and it held together. Sometimes these horses get scattered to the wind when a race gets redrawn and, you know, other opportunities come within sight and everybody sits back for a week. But this thing held together very, very nicely. And a field of 11 for that Queens County plus the Jerome. So it actually made the Saturday card was going to be okay anyway, but that made it even more attractive. So it's going to be fun. Let me reach for Tom and get going in here. After an incredibly silly couple of minutes looking at the parks action, and we start out the thisishorseracing.com. We start out the season with,
oh, yeah.
With Tom Law is the first visit. Good morning, Happy New Year!
Wow, I'm glad to lead off our group. Usually put your fastest guy, you know, in the leadoff spot. Hope to get on base. I mean, I don't know that I am anymore, but you know, my money would be on Sean maybe for the short distance. But hey, I'm happy to be here.
Well, that seems fair. I think of you more. You're more of a long, kind of a long strider.
I used to. I used to be the better of the three of us at the distance running beat. But we've both been surpassed by Joe. He's the dominant one now. He just finished his first marathon actually in December, down in Kiawah Island. So next time you have him on, you'll have to ask him about that.
Absolutely will, and yeah, that good for him.
Yeah, I know.
No, that's a notable accomplishment. I mean, I think personally, it's insane. But
we've got three more to go until he catches me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Not in a long time. Yeah, but you know, that was a long time ago, many IPAs ago.
I love that. That's yeah. No, that I don't. I don't under. I, to me, it's well. It's an abuse. It I understand. Yeah. I understand the concept and the accomplishment aspect. It's not good for the body. It's an abuse of the body. I mean, the body begins to shut down at what? At 18 yeah. miles, 16 miles. You're doing something to your body that's just not natural.
Right. Yeah. It's always been. You know. I guess it's just a personal challenge. Just kind of a. The training itself is probably better. I mean, you never really sort of break down during your training, hopefully. But the race itself is always, you know, for me, it was always, yeah, right around 18 to 22 was about all I could really muster. And then the last couple miles were always just a total slog and a stagger fest to get into the finish. But, you know, I'm done with it. So, I, you know, there's certain things I just don't do anymore. You know, downhill skiing and marathon running, things that are just crazy. I just say, you know, enough with that stuff.
Well, you're too tall to ski.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have the bankroll, you know, it's an expensive hobby.
Well, that, it's another, and to be honest, it's another idiotic undertaking.
It's insane. I have a lot of friends that do it.
Yeah.
I just think, and they're wearing, you know, if you have to wear a helmet, you need to get paid a lot, you know?
Well, I mean, wait a minute. Did you slalom? Did you downhill ski competitively?
No, not at all. But I mean, people casually skiing now and recreationally wear helmets, you know? I mean, you go to West Mountain near Willard, right near you, they're wearing helmets.
Well, you got to have a helmet just to be stupid enough to even go to those hills. It's just ridiculous. I'll make a gigantic admission here. My father was always very willing to let us, you know, experiment and try any crazy, you know, he wanted us to play sports and do all these activities and would bank. You mentioned bankroll, so he started sending us my brother and I. To ski camp, first we'd go locally around Connecticut and into New York and the Berkshires, to learn. And you know, you start out with the sidestep, and then you learn how to snow plow and all the basics.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something. I hated it from word go. and I am such a pachach that he would put the boots on me and snap the boots and I'd start complaining right away. It's like my feet hurt. Jesus, what possible rationale is there to put that stupid equipment on? And then go out there and then of course you look up the hill and there's little peanuts flying down the hill at 80 miles an hour. They can't stop. Our next door neighbor Sissy Cedar. Sissy was almost paralyzed by a kid out of control. Let's not even get to Sonny Bono. I mean, you get people hitting trees and it's
Christopher Reeve, or well, I guess he was hurt in a horse accident.
Yeah,
but yeah, yeah.
I mean,
things like that.
I'll tell you what I enjoy is sitting by a fire and having a drink and a cocoa and a mini marshmallows and a nice cup of yogurt. That for me,
that's
that was the pleasure.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, but you need a sanity clause to go in.
Hey! So obviously you've been listening.
Of course.
It's the greatest. I mean, I
didn't get the reference, but I liked it.
Oh my! You have not seen that scene with the Marx Brothers?
No.
Oh my God!
We'll look it up though.
Oh my God! It I've got it in a. There's a book. There's a book called. Flywheel Shyster and Flywheel. That has got all kinds of sections of scripts of the Marx Brothers, it is. I said Night at the Opera, and I was right. It is a Night at the Opera, and
nice.
Hold on one second here, and we will see if we can't provide at least.
That's the usual clause. That's in every contract. That just says, if any of the parties participating in this contract are shown not to be in their right mind, the entire agreement is automatically nullified.
Well, I don't know.
It's all right. That's in every contract. That's what they call a sanity clause.
You can't fool me. There ain't no sanity clause.
That's great.
Does not get better. Can't fool me. There ain't no sanity clause. You never know. You never know what we're going to come up with day to day.
I love it.
that'll be widely appreciated, I hope, today. Let's try to do some horse racing conversation. And... you know, considering you're the head of the Turf Riders, you might be appropriate to discuss the coming reveal. When do we get the finalists announced?
So voting ended
Tuesday
at 3. I know that the folks with the NTRA are kind of working with the auditors to make sure everything's hunky-dory, good to go. And I think there were approximately upwards of more than 250 ballots that were sent out. And The finalists are going to be announced on FanDuel TV, TVG, at 11:30 Eastern Saturday.
All right, good. All
right. So, yeah, so kind of a good way to start the racing day. As you outlined, pretty good racing day coming up on Saturday. Pretty decent for the first full weekend of the year. Yeah, and we'll find out who the finalists are going to be. Now, obviously, a lot of the divisions are pretty cut and dry, but I think there's some interesting races this year for sure.
Well, are you of a mind to reveal your ballot?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I'm not one that feels the need every year to sort of like put it out there and to sort of explain why I voted the way I did. Maybe my Twitter could use a little bit more mentions or something, but I'm not super controversial, I don't think, in my takes or my criteria for that matter. I kind of just use history as my guide. I look back at, what the Eclipse Awards have meant since 1971, and they're meant to recognize, the best horses that run in North America in the best races against the best competition. So that's kind of how I formulate my opinions. And sure, yeah, I'd be glad to share who I voted for. Fire away.
Let's go. Then, I mean, the obvious, if you want to do it in the order of the way the machinery mm-hmm. spits it out at you, horse of the year was pretty well decided, I think, very clearly.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, if Flightline was, obviously the best horse and won the Breeders' Cup Classic, wish he had run maybe a few more times than three times, but the three races that he won were certainly good. You could almost make a case that if he were to win those three races and say he ran six times and he lost the other three, he still probably would be horse of the year. Met Mile, Pacific Classic, Breeders' Cup Classic, clearly the best horse, no brainer. It should be, I would think, a unanimous, or at least maybe not unanimous, but certainly you could see him being unanimous.
Well, if he's not unanimous as horse of the year, something's amiss.
Yeah.
But there will be people who make the case that he didn't run enough to
right.
suit my
right.
needs. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever you say. All right. 2-year-olds.
Forte, obviously was the Breeders' Cup winner, Breeders' Fraternity winner, pair of grade ones. Pretty simple right there. I liked Blazing Sevens as well. I always give a little bit of love for the Champagne winner and of course Cave Rock. You have to vote for three. Maybe I let my East Coast bias in there by putting Blazing Sevens in second over Cave Rock, but the Champagne to me is a big race and he won it. A little bit of trouble at the start of the Breeders' Cup, maybe I forgave him a little bit for that, but Forte's a no doubt about it winner for sure. Hopeful.
Yeah.
Breeders' Fraternity, Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Yeah, there wasn't that was in fact both of the 2-year-olds seemed
yeah great. Same with Wonder Wheel.
Yeah.
Obviously I mean she had the blemish in the spin away, but certainly incredibly to be second and then came back with the back-to-back grade ones to lock it up for sure. I got my dog here.
He agrees. So. What's the dog's name?
Yeah, Jack, Golden Retriever.
Jack, you went you went deep into the name annals for that.
Yeah, I had to really struggle with that one.
Jesus.
Yeah. I have a cat too. The cat's name is Raisin.
Raisin.
Yeah, Siamese.
Oh,
you
just get more interesting all the time.
There's a lot of depth. There's a lot of depth.
Raisin
is like an onion. There's a lot of layers. So it stinks no matter how many layers you peel off.
Well, you could name your next cat Shallot.
There you go.
Because onion is a little, doesn't. Onion's not a terrible name for a pet.
Yeah, no. Good name for a horse.
Oh, you're boy, what an appearance this is! That you're just bang, bang, right. bang. You're hitting them out of the park.
Dry January, you know, Steve. Dry January, so I'm sharp now.
Out of curiosity, on the Phillies, I've seen some departures actually, and I'm curious, who'd you pick second and third?
Second, I picked Leave No Trace.
Me too.
Yeah, spin away. Obviously, and good, real good race in the Breeders' Cup. You know, I thought for a while there, it looked like she was going to get home. You know, I mean, with Wonder Wheel having to do what she did, coming from so far out of it, you know, I felt like, oh, maybe Leave No Trace is going to win. And then in third, I put Hoosier Filly in there. Tom Amos is a nice filly that won the Golden Rod and the Rags to Riches. Looks like a real top prospect. You know, could have went a lot of different directions, I guess, you know, and Tell Me No Lies obviously is a nice horse out in California. Didn't really show up in the Breeders' Cup, and a few others that are decent, but those are the three that I went with.
The all good. I looked at Hoosier. I looked at Tell Me No Lies, but actually I ended up because I do this very typically. I'll throw in a turf type.
Yeah.
Meditate was so impressive. Yeah. I gave Meditate. You know, and for people that wonder about the three votes, the first, second, and third, the second and third are window dressing. They mean nothing. They're you know, to create a field of finalists, because only the first place votes count toward who is the champion. So it's more or less a chance for those of us that do this to acknowledge other horses and other efforts and so forth.
Yeah, there's kind of a grading or a weighted system with the first place vote, second place vote, third place vote in determining the finalists. And there actually can be a scenario, and there has been scenarios in the past, where someone that was a finalist announced as a finalist, you know, wasn't necessarily among the top three vote getters,
right.
I believe.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's not like a 5-3-1. I think it might be a 5-3-1 to determine the finalists, but it's not a 5-3-1 to kind of determine the champion. Just the first place votes, as you said.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move to the 3-year-olds and male and female.
Yeah.
Female is a slam dunk, but the boys' race really. I thought there was real intelligent and thoughtful discussion.
Mm-hmm.
About the Epicenter Taba comparisons, and it's really interesting because it brings into perspective or into focus a lot of the things about the calendar year and the opportunities that, you know, particularly sophomores have, because it's such a established and written in stone, chiseled, you know, set of standards to compare the seasons of Epicenter and Taba, and it's going to be. I think Epicenter is going to win, but I think it's going to be close.
Yeah, looking at what's out there, you know, from seeing the people's votes, yeah, I would agree. I think it seems like Epicenter is going to win. Both, you know, not similar campaigns, but sort of, I guess, similar resumes. I know Tava's got the three grade ones, but, you know, I mean, the Santa Anita Derby, yes, is a grade one, and it has been for a long time, but, you know, I weight that race almost the same as the Louisiana Derby. I mean, they're both Kentucky Derby prep races. Both usually have, you know, pretty decent fields, where the winner at least is usually someone that comes out of it and does well. You know, second in the Derby, second in the Preakness, and then winning the Travers, along with the Louisiana Derby and his other placings, you know, the only off the board effort was injured in the Breeders' Cup. To me, it was a stronger resume than the Santa Anita Derby, the Pennsylvania Derby, which was, you know, this year was very strong. You know, with Cyberknife and Zandon, Tony Osano's horse Simplification in there, some decent horses in there, you know, and then the Malibu is kind of a, you know, to me is it's fine. It's a grade one, I guess, 7/8, kind of a, last chance saloon kind of race, I guess, for some horses, or maybe a launch pad like it was for Flightline a year ago. So he won that. You know, he won it, and he ran a really good race in the Breeders' Cup Classic to be third behind, you know, two horses that are obviously 1-2 in the older male division. You know, and then I know there's a lot of love for Modern Games, or at least there's a little bit of love out there for him. The grass horse that won the Breeders' Cup Mile also won the Woodbine Mile over older horses, both those races over older horses. Nice horse and everything, but, you know, to me, I know it's not spelled out, but to me, these awards are the 3-year-old male and 2-year-old male and 2-year-old filly, 3-year-old filly. They're dirt racing awards, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part.
It's not spelled out. And as the president of the Turf Riders, I'm not in any rush to add divisions. You know, I'd hate to have like a 3-year-old turf division. That would just be incredibly lame. But, you know, these are, I think they've always been looked upon as dirt awards, you know, even going all the way back in the older divisions. Now we divided it up into a dirt male, dirt female. But the 3-year-old male division is sort of that, you know, classic distance 3-year-olds get the edge that run in the classic races or Travers or, you know, run well at the end of the year. Horses like Tis Now and stuff like that. So to me, it's epicenter in there.
Epicenter for me, Taba second, Cyberknife third. I'm sorry about the Modern Games. I couldn't even vote for him as Turf Horse, but I don't have anything, you know, against him, quote unquote. But when we'll talk about the 3-year-old fillies, I'll make my case, and I understand what you're saying about the turf. I have voted for plenty of turf horses in different spots.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, Spenderella is my third 3-year-old mm-hmm. filly. But, I mean, if we go back a few years, I did not accept Take Charge Brandy as the 2-year-old. I voted Lady Eli that year and still mm-hmm. feel like she should have been the 2-year-old filly champion. But anyway, I digress.
Well, I mean, you're of the thinking maybe, and maybe I should have said that. I think we agree on this, is that if there's a year where Anise or something wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and you're kind of like, you know, like, or a maiden, you know, maiden, say a maiden wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, which happens, you know, then you kind of maybe look at a grass horse that maybe has a really good resume. And I almost feel like you could almost do it some years in the 3-year-old filly division versus maybe the 3-year-old male division. There seems to be more of a consistent pattern and maybe more opportunities at the quote-unquote top level for 3-year-old fillies on the grass. You know, there's a lot of, maybe there are the same number of grade ones or big grade twos, but, you know, there seems to be a lot of really prestigious grade one 3-year-old filly races on the grass. So you could have a horse where that maybe has 3 or 4 of those grade one victories. You know, if they win the QE2, they win the Del Mar Oaks, you know, races like that. Maybe the Garden City or the, you know, Belmont Oaks, Saratoga Oaks, one of those kind of races. There's a lot of chances out there.
Yeah.
Unless you have a filly like Nest, and then you're like, okay, slam dunk, close the door.
Exactly.
Move on.
Right,
yeah.
And I'm just looking through my previous years, and I mentioned Lady Eli. I actually voted for her for 3-year-old of the year too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When it went to I'm a Chatterbox. But I also,
she was okay.
Yeah, she was okay. I also, yeah. Lady Shipman. I voted for Lady Shipman as female sprinter that year in 2014.
Dan with Golden Pal. Yeah.
Look at that.
Who
disappointed actually this year.
Yeah.
So my point is that I've never been afraid to, you know, to go in that direction.
Right.
There was somebody else too that fit into this category that I'm forgetting about. There was another turf type I could have sworn. Oh, I know. I guess Catch a Glimpse. I voted second that year. Okay, mm-hmm. I did not pick her on top. But I'm always open to that. All right, let's press into So I went Ness, Secret Oath, Spenderella.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did Secret Oath. So did I. And I felt like I've
of course, she had to be.
A lot of ballots out there where she's not even mentioned. And I'm like,
whoa.
I mean, you don't talk about it.
Not in the top three?
I've seen a few. Yeah. I mean, which to me is nuts.
Wow. All right.
I mean, Kentucky Oaks, you know?
Wow.
The Honey Bee was as good a race as there was for three-year-old fillies. You know, that she won.
She ran in the Arkansas Derby. Maybe people forgot that.
Yeah, and second in the CCA and the Alabama and on the board in the Cotillion and didn't run a bad race in the Distaff. I mean,
there was a couple of strides where it looked like she was going to win.
I know. Agreed. Yeah, but ironically, wow. I've seen people voting for obviously. Matarea, and I've seen her on.
Well, Matarea is a sprinter. Yeah. I put Matarea second as the sprinter, but not as the three-year-old filly.
Right.
Hey. Right. Hey.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah. Hey. Agreed.
Hey. All right.
Not my ballot. Ness first, Secret Oath second.
Not on my ballot.
My watch.
All right, the older, we got to press on. Let's get to the older male and older female, which both, again, seem like
slight line, slam dunks. Life obviously. Is good, Olympiad.
That's what I did. Those are my three.
You could have done Olympiad or Life is Good. You could have switched them, I guess.
Nah, you couldn't.
Pegasus, Whitney, much better than Jockey Cup, Gold Cup, and, runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Classic and his other races. So.
Yeah.
That's how I came with that one.
I agree.
Females, I mean, Malathat, Clairier, and then Blue Stripe.
Yeah, I went Malathat, Clairier, Search Results.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, Search Results is very underrated. I'm on the committee that kind of puts together the older, the supplement. It's me and a representative of the Blood Horse, representative of the Racing Forum. We kind of go through all the horses, and usually all the grade one winners are in there. And then we kind of had to look and say, like, who else should we put in there just to make sure that we're covering all the bases? And Search Results was one of those horses.
Yeah,
she,
of course.
She didn't win a grade one, but was certainly one of the top older fillies and mares, for sure.
Definitely. Sprinter, I'm anxious to hear your thoughts here.
Yeah. I went around and around. I ended up voting for Elite Power. Maybe because I'm a New Yorker. And I don't consider the Vosburgh a grade two in my mind. So he won the two grade ones, even though it wasn't certainly a great field. Beat a nice horse and drafted, though, in the Vosburgh. It's been nice. And, it was hard to not vote for Jackie's Warrior, to be honest. I mean, he won four times, all stakes. All good stakes. The Count Fleet is only a quote grade three, but that's as good a sprint race as there is. And, his win in the Vanderbilt at Saratoga was awesome, even though it wasn't against much. But, back to back defeats to the end of the season. I guess I leaned on the fact that the Breeders' Cup was sort of created to determine the champions, and that's the way I went. I mean, he was third in there and had every right to win it and didn't. And Elite Power did, came on at the end of the season to lock it up. So I went Elite Power, Jackie's Warrior, voted for Jack Christopher in third, 3 year old, won two. His 2 7 furlong races were as good as any sprint races there were this year. Fast, did it the right way and did it, going away. You could have voted for him too on top. And I've seen some people do that.
Well, I did it.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, yeah. I think you could go for any of those three. And I think that's going to be a really interesting vote outcome. I hope, I hope there's some little bit of drama for the night. And that might be where it is. That's one of them. One of the spots where there'll be some drama.
Well, you know who was a tweener in all of this? Because we've already talked about older male and sprint and male sprinter. Cody's Wish was I could not find a place for him
on
the ballot, and it looks like you didn't either.
It made me sad. I was like, he's a forget the story,
right.
I mean, the story itself is awesome, but the horse is equally awesome.
Right.
You mentioned the word tweener earlier. Maybe he's that.
I mean,
if if the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile is maybe a one turn, and I know that seems strange to say, maybe if it's a one turn at Churchill Downs, or heaven forbid we have the Breeders' Cup at Belmont again, maybe he would get more consideration as a sprinter. But he's got the two, you know, his two graded stakes wins were both, you know, one turn events. I mean, the one was a mile, and then the forego. I mean, his forego was good. I mean, he beat Jackie's Warrior. He beat last year's champ. And somehow he doesn't find a way onto my ballot either in the sprint division or in the older male. I mean, maybe that's the strength of those divisions. And I think he's going to be a major player this year. Looking forward to him coming back.
How about the girls? What'd you do there?
The girls, I went Goodnight Olive.
Yeah.
Kind of locked it up in the Philly Mare sprint. And then Caravelle, I put in the second spot. You know, obviously winning the turf sprint. The division was, you know, a little bit spotty. I think there's some really nice horses in here, but nobody put together like a really spectacular resume. And then I put Just One Time in third. I mean, she didn't run after the Derby City Distaff on Derby Day, but her two races this year were outstanding, you know, on Pegasus Day and then the Madison at Keeneland. Nice horse. So, but again, she was just in the third spot. So, yeah.
Goodnight Olive, Matarea, Caravelle for me. Let's blow through the turf as well. And,
sure.
And this will be interesting because the male turf, it was really a mess.
Maybe it's an indictment on our grass horses. I don't know. I voted for Modern Games first, Rebels Romance second. I'm not crazy about voting for one-off European horses that come over. So obviously Modern Games got the nod there. He ran there twice. And then I put Casa Creed in for third.
Mm-hmm.
And was tempted to almost, if he had run a little bit better in those last two, you know, I could have voted for him. Maybe not necessarily on top. If he won one of those races, maybe. But, you know, two grade ones, the Jiper and the Four Star Dave, won a turf sprint, won a mile, two-turn race. Versatile, nice horse. You know, I'm a big fan of his. But that's how I went.
I usually do not do the one-off either, although you know, when it had to be, for me, it usually has to be a Golda Kova type, a Ouija board type. In this particular case, I ended up with Rebels Romance because I just thought that he was so impressive. I went Modern Game second, and I, you know, the Woodbine Mile, you know, America, but it, I don't know. It doesn't. I don't know. And Casa Creed was third for me. And I.
Oh, good.
And I wish, you know, I wish for Lee Einsiedler, I kind of wish that the Breeders' Cup had been somewhere else this year, because it's obvious after this point in his career that the footing at Keeneland is not to his liking, and we know this about sand-based courses, and it's and that's just a fact. So it's kind of too bad that he had to make the starts that he did, because if he'd been anywhere else, and he could have impacted, let's say if he'd been in California and he'd gone out for whatever, the Shoemaker or the Mathis or whatever the hell, it might have been the Kilrow. And a Breeders' Cup, he's a champion in a lot of different years. Looks like he's going to be back at seven, so he'll get another shot at it.
Great. He's a fun horse, you know. Hats off to those guys for bringing him back. I mean, it's great. You love having a horse like that in training and, you know, in good hands, and those guys enjoy it, and, you know, that's what racing's all about.
What'd you do in the chase or in the girls category?
Female, I did Warlike Goddess.
Wow.
You know, the race at Turf Classic and the Fly, you know, I didn't hold it against her in the Flower Bowl. You know, a couple other good races, and ran great in the Breeders' Cup. You know, Philly finished, got beat three lengths to a couple nice European horses. And then I went In Italian over Regal Glory. You know, I think there's a lot of sentiment out there that it could have been any of Chad's horses, either of Chad's horses, I guess. You know, the Matriarch didn't knock my socks off. Wasn't all that strong of a race. And then, you know, her losses in the first lady to in Italian kind of maybe was what gave in Italian the edge for me.
Well, I for me, part of, and I'll admit this quite freely, part of my rationale for voting for Regal Glory was the campaign was more than adequate, and most likely the final chance to pay tribute to Paul Pompa. And
yeah, that's cool. I mean, he was a great guy, and you know, great breeder. And you mentioned the word campaign. She actually had a campaign, you know, and that's I like to see that. You know,
agreed.
January Pegasus, and then you know the proper races at Keeneland in the spring, and then all the way till the end of the year, obviously till December. So hats off to her and her team. She may win. She could win. Wouldn't surprise me.
It's gonna be interesting. I went Regal in Italian, Warlike Goddess, and I've seen people vote for Tuesday, which as much as I like her and I picked her and did well with her, but I don't see her invading.
Right.
You know, we had plenty of good. There were plenty of adequate North American candidates. What about Chase? Yeah.
What about Steeplechase? Snap Decision, of course. My man. You know, a couple of grade ones, the Iroquois back in the spring, and then obviously the Shepherd at Saratoga was as good a race as you'll see. You know, I guess didn't hold it against him his losses. Had some pretty tough losses, but you know, he's the best Steeplechase horse in the country this year. And that's who I went. I picked Down Royal in second, and Hewick in the third spot.
I'll flip it around. I went Hewick, and part of it is just the opportunity maybe to get Shark Hanlon to come to the awards. Shark Hanlon at the Breakers. They could sell tickets to that. That enough would be him at the maybe he would bring Hewick into the bar at the Breakers.
That'd be great. I hope so. I'm going to be there. So I hope so.
Well, of course you're going to be there. You can't resist the chance to put on a tuxedo. You
you know, I wore one. I had friends of mine that had a Christmas party, and the theme of the Christmas party was pajamas or formal. And I was like, that's a strange, like, why such a chasm of attire? And I was like, oh, well, I have a tuxedo. I'm going to wear it.
So you basically that's
another layer of the onion. See, we're way off track.
Unbelievable!
It still fits. I was happy that it still fits. So,
well, yeah. No, I listen. I am certainly somebody that believes in putting on a tuxedo at any opportunity. Frequently referring to me in a tuxedo, I'm the Jewish James Bond in a tuxedo.
You're always dressed really well.
Well, in a tuxedo, forget about it. It's scary. Plus you carry yourself differently when you put on the tux.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Yeah,
the shoulders go back and
feel different. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But the way you describe this party, you must have looked like Elle Woods in that scene when she comes in the bunny costume to the right.
I told my friends that I was going to do it, so I think they sort of warned some of the other people that were going to be there, and it wasn't a huge amount of people that were there. It was probably a dozen, maybe 15. And I kind of walked in. It was great. And of course, I showed up a little late, you know, so everybody was already there, you know, so I had to make a good entrance. I came alone. My girlfriend was down in New York City with her mom and her sisters. So I came alone, and it was great. You know, hey, you own it, bring it, right?
did people take you for hired, you know, for wait staff?
They thought I was, yeah. Yeah. I think they were glad that the help was
all right.
Clean up. Yeah.
Let's get the owner, breeder, the human categories. Run through the human categories.
Yeah, owner, I went with Godolphin. Great year.
Yeah,
outstanding year.
Yeah.
In the breeder, I actually went with Ashview Farm and Colt's Neck Stable.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. You know, they bred Mo Donegal and Nest. correct? You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, you talk about two horses like that, kind of a small breeding operation. Look at the number of starts that they had and the number of wins, and then they come up with two horses like that. Just incredible. I mean, but at the same time, I mean, you could go, I mean, you look at the year that that Stone Street had, you know, the Clairiere and Malafat, they bred them, you know, just an outstanding operation that they are. Godolphin, you know, their horses, you voted for them as owner. How could you not vote for them as breeder? I didn't, but I mean, no, all those horses that they have are homebreds. Yeah. Just an incredible year, really very strong year this year.
Well, and
for them in a summer win, I mean, bred,
that's who I bet. That's who I voted.
Commercial breeder, they're a commercial. She's a genius. That lady, Jane Lyon. She's brilliant. Just outstanding. Cares for her horses. Loves her horses. You know, breeds horses for the market. He's almost a sales topper, and then he becomes the horse of the year and one of the best horses we've seen in a long time. And that's the ultimate goal for any commercial breeder. And she did it, and should be rewarded. I voted for them second. If they won, it'd be great. Hats off to them.
I voted for Jane Lyon, and I always, whenever there's an opportunity to acknowledge a breeder like her, I will take that opportunity and. It just, you know, it presents itself, and I know she's going to get some others. I've heard from a couple of people.
Deservingly so. Yeah, she's just outstanding.
Yeah, excellent.
Jockey? I went Irad.
Irad. Yep. No argument.
Rosario second.
Yep.
Luis Saez third.
I went Pratt third. Yep.
Yeah, Apprentice, I went Jose Gomez. I mean, for the mere fact that we're at Saratoga all the time, I felt like I looked up like once a day, or I know it wasn't once a day, but it was every once in a while. I'd look up, I'd be in the office working, I'd be like, man, Jose Gomez won another one, you know, and he had a great meet. I think he rode 12 winners. He had a good year. He was on the New York circuit, got to reward that. So I did, maybe East Coast bias.
No, it's fair. And in fact, I told Andy yesterday, Kelly Breen saw my ballot and he was like, how did you not vote for Gomez? I voted for Barbosa. And I just found Gomez very streaky. And I understand he's in the tough room. And he's you know, it's a different, it's a, and I very frequently acknowledge the New York, the New York Apprentice for that reason. But I mean, every time I looked up and was watching anything from the Mid-Atlantic, Barbosa was bringing home prices and I mean, horses run for him, and I just liked what I saw from him. It seemed more consistent. Jose Gomez is want to go into some protracted funks. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I mean, you'll look up and he's won for his last, you know, 40. It's tough. That has lingered with me a little. And that gets us to one of the toughest categories, trainer.
I think so. Last but not least, right?
Yep.
I voted for Todd Fletcher.
Yes, I don't know.
You know, I was looking at his year, and I went and looked at his career, and I know that it doesn't necessarily matter for this purposes, but really this is one of his best years ever. And he's in the Hall of Fame, obviously. You know, had Malafat, Forte, Nest. He won the Modonegal in the Belmont.
1-2. Ran 1-2 in the Belmont.
Yeah, 1-2 in the Belmont. Just, you know, a factor in so many divisions throughout the year. Dirt and turf. You know, he just won so many important races. I mean, you know, obviously Chad Brown also had a great resume, a lot of grade ones, a lot of graded stakes, a lot of really good horses that we've talked about as finalists today. Both guys, you know, neck and neck, but, you know, I gave the edge to Todd. I mean, I just felt like his year was just so outstanding for him by his own standards.
No, I
so that's where I went.
I agree, and as I've explained, to me, when it came down to it, because their numbers, their stake winners, their total wins, their total earnings, they were interchangeable.
And
there were versions of my ballot that had Chad in, and mm-hmm. I went back and forth twice. Mm-hmm. And the key for me was what we call, the Privman doctrine. Go through your ballot and add up the horses and look at the categories that the competitors had an effect on. And when you look at having Forte, Nest,
yep.
and Malathat, and Life is Good second as Horse of the Year,
mm-hmm.
and I actually put Nest third as Horse of the Year, you look mm-hmm. at those votes, and Chad's right there with
yeah.
I mean, Jack Christopher, I don't think is going to win Sprinter, but in my mind, he was the best. Goodnight mm-hmm. Olive, and then the domination in the female turf, and then the other assorted quality search results. I had search results on the ballot.
Yeah.
I have Blazing Sevens on the ballot.
Yeah,
so
me too. Yeah.
It to me, those three categories of champion
sure.
for Todd are just enough to tip the scale to me. I mean, it is to me. It's going to be amazing to see how close that vote is going to be.
Yeah.
Within single digits.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're going to get some people that are going to vote for John Sadler.
I get it. That's not a policy that historically I've subscribed to.
No, I haven't either, but I know people will, and that could affect the vote, even this month. But yeah, it's going to be a big night for Todd, I think.
Todd, Jed, and team flight line, and Godolphin, because Godolphin's got other, who very quietly had a good year was Judmont.
Agreed. Yeah, I put them in third in the owner list that
so
we were talking. Yeah, Godolphin, Winchell second, and then Judmont third. And they had a really good year.
Yeah, which is heartening that.
Agreed.
That the family is going to go forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Tom, I've got to get to Terry Meeks. And
all right.
This was outstanding.
Terry, I said hello.
This was a tremendous start to the season for the ThisIsHorseRacing.com crowd that then morphs into Saratoga Special.
Oh, won't be long.
No, it really won't, actually, now that you said that. All right, it's 6 months.
Yeah, let's go.
You're ready.
Doesn't look like it here today in Saratoga, but we're
no,
getting
it's
there.
Kind of messy. Kind of messy. Yeah. Although we're bereft of snow, and
yeah,
all right.
Still running in shorts. Yeah, I'll take it.
No, you're one of those. You're one of those wackos that wear shorts. At least even John Fetterman put on a pair of pants this week.
He still got the hoodie though. I hope.
Still got the hoodie. No, he actually he didn't wear a jacket. I don't know if he must have like a size 20 neck, right? He can't possibly get to put a dress shirt on.
I know.
So funny.
I wouldn't mess with him. Yeah, no. Yeah, I'm not crossing that dude.
Tom, I appreciate it. Tom Law, everybody. Saratoga TL. And if you're looking for a somebody to run with you, or somebody maybe to go kayaking with, somebody
winter hiking,
snowshoe.
Yeah.
Do you snowshoe?
Oh yeah, yeah, sure do.
There's something wrong with you, Tom Law. Everybody, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Unbelievable, Tom Law. Everybody, look for him in a tuxedo near you. That was unbelievable. We're going to get Terry Meeks in here, and Terry's going to talk to us about the insurance. I want this addressed so that everybody understands how our industry has to deal with disability insurance and the way in which jock coverage. And we'll get Tony Black as well in a little bit. But right now, Happy New Year, Terry Meeks.
Happy New Year.
Terry, I thought that this was a timely visit, and not that any visit with you isn't timely, but this situation that frankly, the NFL being deservedly brought under a microscope for their insurance coverage and the way they treat their athletes in lieu of Monday night's horror. And then on Sunday at Sunland, Jory Scriver, she's facing a rehab, and ideally she'll be able to walk out of the hospital. But I wanted you to come in and explain to everybody how we as an industry deal with this issue.
Well, it's been, you know, it's been difficult over the years. You know, I think, you know, first of all, the NFL and the teams have to be applauded for their efforts. You know, having paramedics, defibrillator, the response, you know, and the rapid response, you know, but they prepared for it in the off season during training camp and prior to every game. They had the ambulance there immediately there. They have trauma centers in every NFL city. You know, this is what we've been over the years requesting, dealing with the ARC. And over the years, the system has failed. I'll be honest with you. Now, we've gotten better the last 15 years. You know, but we've had 159 deaths since the guild was formed. You know, that's two a year. That's not including the, you know, the jockey, the individuals that were paralyzed or had head injuries. You know, we need to do better, not for all, for all riders, including exercise riders. But, you know, we've also been out there saying that paramedics should be in the paddock. You know, if an owner or a trainer or a groom or assistant trainer gets kicked, you know, we've done that. So the industry needs to do better. But we need to work together in coordination, you know, with the paramedics. And, you know, there's been a lot of tracks, you know, that, you know, even the NTRA, we had, if you remember, we resigned from, I resigned from the advisory board for the NTRA, you know, the accreditation process. They were supposed to be doing stuff and they didn't do it. You know, and it's, you know, jocks, you know, and they're not numbers. And it's been, you know, the NFL football players feel that they're also a number. But, you know, what has happened to the, you know, the prime time and the game itself has brought attention to it. But, you know, we're in the last, you know, 50 years, you know, again, we averaged two deaths a year since 1940. Luckily for the last, you know, 12, 15 years, it's only been one death, and it's been at the lower tracks, and I shouldn't say Parks is lower track, but for the most part, it's been at tracks. But every track should be, you know, they should have the paramedics in the ambulances, and if not, they should have a license, and they should train for it. You know, I put my management hat on when I was at NYRA. You know, we had issues when we went to Saratoga, and we had an independent outfit coming in. We had to make sure they were trained and, you know, where the gaps are, where to, how to get to the hospital and, you know, where to, the barn area and gaps in the turf course. And, you know, that's what the NFL has done. Now, I've, if you got a couple seconds, sure. You know, Dr. Sills, who's the chief medical director for the NFL, I've known for years, not well, but I've talked to him probably, oh, maybe a dozen times over the years. When I first got involved with the Guild in 2007, Bert Firestone, who was, you know, outstanding, you know, an owner, prominent owner, owned Calder and Gulfstream, who I had an excellent rapport with because I was the race secretary at Calder and Gulfstream. When I got involved with the Guild, he picked up the phone and called me. He said, "Terry, can you do me a favor?" I said, "What's that, Mr. Firestone?" He said, "My personal doctor, Dr. Farrell, who's an orthopedic doctor, He's trying to have like a seminar or workshop at basically, in Kentucky on helmet safety." So I said, "I will be there at Kentucky Horse Park." And the following year we went to, Wellington in Florida, Jeff Johnson and myself. And one of those years, Dr. Sills was there speaking, and Dr. Sills, who's the chief medical director for the NFL, was a good friend with Dr. Farrell and Mr. Firestone. And they were talking about safety issue. Now, back in like 5 years later, Dr. Farrell got killed playing polo, you know, with a head injury, you know. So amazing. It, you know, and it's,
You know, it's so important. Again, we can, by working together, and again, the helmets, we got better helmets, we got the safety vest, you know, and the safety vest dated back to mid, you know, 93, 94, you know, they save lives. The railing, the Fontana railings, and, you know, but we can, we all working together can do better for the good of the game, you know. And but again, jockeys, you know, it's just, when have you seen the outpour that anywhere, you know, again, of a jockey getting killed? You know, you might see an article in the trades or something like that for one day, and they just go on. You know, they're human beings. And the same thing with exercise riders, and we need to do better as an industry.
Terry Beeks with us from the Jockeys Guild. And Terry, explain the coverage, the policies that have to be in place. This has actually been a contentious issue at certain times between certain track organizations and jockeys. Who's obliged to have umbrella policies and seven-figure coverage for disabilities? Explain who's responsible for what in that system.
Well, there's four states. There's workers' comp states. Again, if a jockey were to be injured, you'd want to be injured in a workers' comp. New York, New Jersey, Maryland, and California. That their bills are taken care of, you know, for the rest of their lives. You know, I'm sure at some point, you know, the jocks themselves have to get attorneys to make sure. But if you're going to get injured, you want to be injured in a workers' comp state. With that said, we've been, again, the guild has only been, you know, been forceful enough, you know, but it's only as strong as the colony itself. But we've basically said there has to be $1 million on-track accident policy for each injury. But again, whether it be, there's a couple of jocks that's had spinal cord injuries and head injuries, you go through that $1 million within weeks, you know, this day and age. So, you know, that's the one things we've been talking to, and, you know, I applaud for HISA, you know, with, they've hired Dr. Pete Hester. Now, I've introduced Pete Hester to Dr. Sills within the last 6 months, and they've had conversations together. But you know, it's just, it's a major issue. It's the insurance and making sure that, you know, there's adequate insurance to take care of it, and making sure the response is needed, and ambulances found the field, you know, no matter what kind of condition the track. And, you know, it's very important in that first response within minutes. You know, Johnny Velasquez says at Santa Anita Breeders' Cup several years ago, the paramedic basically saved his life.
Right. In terms of what transpires after the initial, you know, the initial circumstances, and if there is a head injury involved, if we think, you know, Ramon obviously with one, and Rick Wilson comes to mind, Rosario Montanez, how he has come back yet again to ride is miraculous, frankly. But whose obligation and who is paying for, you know, particularly for those that are wheelchair bound? Is the PDJF essentially?
They've had standards again. You got to wait 2 years. You know, we're a member of the permanently disabled. There's no guaranteed money, guaranteed funding for the permanently disabled. You know, basically, you know, in the last few years, we get the telethon raising $300,000, which doesn't, you know, and, you know, we've been trying to get more money for the permanently disabled, you know, in escrow, put money in escrow account to make it. But there's roughly 60 permanently disabled jocks that we receive $1,000 a month. That's $12,000. That's well below poverty. You know, but there's standards, and, you know, and again, you know, with the head injuries and the concussions, and, you know, it's, you know, they just don't have the funding to making sure. There's one girl you didn't mention that's very dear to my heart is Stacy Burton, who got injured in a severe accident back early 2000s in Arizona.
Right.
She's wonderful. I mean, if she's on Facebook, anybody could look at her injury and how it happened, and it just could happen to any one jockey in the country. You know, horse got loose at the gate. It was a bull ring, and, you know, the horse went the opposite way, came through. The outriders tried to stop it. They didn't call the race off. Horse went right through. Stacy, you know, went up in the air and came down in severe injury and head injury, and
yeah.
She's remarkable, you know. But it's, you know, it's so dear to heart. You know, again, the jocks that die and stuff. And I think jocks would rather die than being paralyzed. You know, they've said that for years.
Yep, I've heard the same thing.
But, you know, the industry has done better the last 15 years, but we can do so much better. And again, I've always maintained, it keeps, you know, everybody worried about the cost of insurance. And if you spend extra more money going into it, you know, with regard to the starting gate, to the rails, the flexible rails on the turf course, breakaway rails on the turf course, they save lives, which then reduces injuries and lawsuits and, you know, costs for insurance and stuff like that. So, but again, it's saving lives is the key. And doing the best we can, and, you know, having a response. And again, I'm sorry, if they can't afford an ambulance and they can't afford a paramedic, or they shouldn't have a license. Period. End of story. Yeah. And we love the game, but if they can't be in the game and to do the right things for safety for horses and jockeys and exercise riders, and as I mentioned, even in the paddocks, how many times I was, you know, at Aqueduct, the old paddock, Alan Jerkins got kicked. So, you know, and we basically we changed the paddock, and, you know, a couple years later, and, you know, it's, you got to make it a safe environment, and it's a dangerous, you know, it's a dangerous industry, and we got to make sure people are going to get hurt. We all know that, but we got to do our best efforts to reduce the injuries.
Well, and there's been so much, and you touched on it in the opening remark, actually. And in some cases, there's occasions where things are discovered that hadn't even been anticipated, and sometimes, you know, it has to happen for anybody to even be aware. And you mentioned Aqueduct Paddock. I remember it's probably 10 years now when Davey Cohen got kicked in the morning, and nobody. The ambulance was up on the racetrack, of course, for workers, but nobody really had thought about the potential for somebody to get hurt, you know, at 7 a.m. Sometimes things happen that just were never even anticipated, and then you add that to the, you know, to the list of you know, checkoff points, and, you know, all the work that Steve Cook did, when it came to, you know, I know you had issues with the Safety Integrity Alliance, but it, you know, it absolutely brought any number of particularly smaller venues up to code, as it were, and you know, the breakaway rails. How about the advances of the warning system, the intercom, and the siren system, and the lighting system. For runaway horses, for loose horses, that was unified.
You know, we're not talking about much money at one time. You know, Delaware was one of the first ones to put it. And I was told it was like $8,000, you know, to do it. You're not talking about that much money.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's, you know, that's where I think, you know, who the heck knows what's going to happen with HISA down the road. But, you know, we've had positive discussions about safety issues and making sure, and again, bringing in Dr. Pete Hester, who I've known for years, you know, he's got the passion and, you know, to do the right thing as long as he can do it or try to do the best he can. And he's trying to work, you know, with, and trying to understand racing, you know, but he has, and he's helped. I got to know him. He was in that, you know, part of the group and with us and raising money for the permanently disabled. You know, handicapping thing that Thursday, 10 days before the Derby, we'd have a handicapping session in Lexington. And he brought in the NBC crew and stuff like that. And we raised some, you know, a lot of awareness for permanently disabled. And, you know, some money from for the permanent disabled, and or you know, over 7 or 8 years, it was significant. And but he's got that passion. He wants to do the right thing, and he cares about individuals as human beings, and wants to do the right thing. So hopefully, you know, he can, you know, succeed.
Well, I wanted to get a snapshot of this, you know, given that it's top of mind. One thing that to me has been evident, the seemingly sudden awareness, you know, of the chest compression injuries, and there's been plenty explained, and most notably, you know, hockey puck, baseball, and body to body blows when it comes to football. But our athletes and the equine, of course, they're at risk under incredible peril. Not, you know, once every 20 years, 50 years, 100 years that there's a fatality or a devastating injury, and our athletes are under this threat every single day, every single race, every single venue, morning and afternoon and night. And we operate, Terry, it seems, and I'm going to talk to Tony about this later, Tony Black. It might be in the back of people's minds, but, you know, everybody soldiers forward and, you know, knows it's there, but remarkably, you know, just deal with, you know, with that constant threat. And it's a courage that is unbelievable when you think about it in this context.
Just a couple things, you know. One, you know, in a race, horses are going 30, 35 miles an hour, and spills, and horses fall and get, you know,
heel clips,
stepped on. But even pulling up after the race, how many times, yep, you know, I've heard a handful of times in the last few years coming off the turf course onto the thing, horses stumble and fall on the jocks. And you talk about a football player and, you know, heart compress, you know, if they fall on the individual, it could kill them. Yeah, it's just, you know, the other thing is, which is important, there's when I first got involved with the Guild back in, you know, 2007, a couple years later, a couple of jocks got killed at small venues. Well, one was an exercise rider who just became a rider, and he fell off when he using the crop, he lost his balance and fell off and died. Another one came back after 10 years not riding, and then he came back and didn't have any equipment. He had to borrow it. In the second race he rode, you know, he fell, you know, hit the rail and killed himself. He got killed.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, qualifications and making sure that the stewards, you know, making sure that they're qualified and ready to race. And, you know, I think it's so very important too, but there's so much more that has to be done to protect everybody and protect our industry as a whole.
Well, any time spent doing this is time well spent, and I'll reach out to Nancy LaSala as well from PDJF and get her perspective, and we're going to hear from Tony Black as well. Terry, I appreciate it. I mean, obviously, I could throw another dozen things at you, but we'll save
that's
it
for another day.
Yeah, exactly. I appreciate this because I think stakeholders and horse players, fans, I mean, they've got to be watching, you know, what is going on, and as tough as it is to deal with it, we want to remind everybody about how, you know, how our industry handles the same topic.
Right.
So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Terry,
have a good day.
Terry Meeks, everybody, and the Jockey Guild, and, of course, PDJF.org. That may have come as an eye-opener to some people, right? $1,000 a month as the annuity. Annuity is the wrong word. Stipend, benefit. I mean, what is that? When you've got the kind of upkeep that's involved with, you know, mobility injuries, that's not going very far, to say the least. So we'll get Nancy in. This is her full time at PDJF. Nancy LaSalle does an amazing job. Haven't talked to her in too long, so probably next week. All right, we'll get to Nancy. We'll take our only break of the morning. We got so much going on. We got to get to Tony. We've got Dave Hill, Seth, and Rich Eng, and 90 minutes to visit with all of them. All right, might do it now. Take a break. Back after this.